Hello, everyone, and welcome to Podcast Creators, a show where we get podcasting advice from real podcasters. Today on the show, we talk to David Rosen, host of Piecing It Together podcast. I'm your host, Greg, creator of Indie Drop-In Network. Today's interview was recorded on Riverside FM, so if you like the way this sounds and want to try it on your own podcast, we have an affiliate link in the show notes below. Speaking of links, I will put all of David's links, plus links to everything we talk about on today's show in the show notes below. All right, let's get started. I am super excited to talk to David and get advice for everybody. In the intro, I introduced David Rosen as the host of Piecing It Together, but Piecing It Together is only one of the amazing things that David does. I should probably just let him introduce himself.
I'm David Rosen. I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada. I am a music composer. I compose music for films, commercials, for podcasts. I also put out albums of instrumental music. I also host the Piecing It Together podcast, which is a podcast about movies and the movies that inspire them. I also co-host the Bird Road podcast with my best friend Q, which is about politics and culture and stuff like that, and also just us hanging out and talking on mic. I also produce Awesome Movie Year, which is another different kind of movie podcast, and All Rice, No Beans, which is a restaurant podcast, although that is on hiatus at the moment due to the pandemic. But once things are a little smoother, we're hoping to get that back on track.
That is incredible. Did you compose all the music for the podcasts that you work on?
Absolutely. Bird Road sometimes will throw in a track here and there that I didn't work on. But yeah, I did the themes for all the other podcasts. I also have been hired by a bunch of other podcasts that I don't actively work on, but did make the opening themes or interstitials or any of that kind of stuff.
After David and I recorded this interview, I scrapped the intro and outro I had picked out for podcast creators and worked with David to create the intro and the outro you hear on this episode and all episodes of Podcast Creators. So David, based on your expertise in sound and music, I'm very interested in what equipment you use to create your podcast. Can you give us a rundown?
I use this SM7B, which I'm talking to you with right now. It's going through a cloud lifter into a Focusrite interface. But yeah, the SM7B is my main microphone. I also have a couple of SM58s for when I'm out and about and doing the occasional live show or on-location recording. I use Studio One for my DAW, although, you know, anybody who just wants to use something free, Audacity is always good. I always tell all of my clients, you know, to make sure they have it installed just in case they need to record their own thing for like a backup or something like that.
Okay, so you're currently talking to us on the SM7B, but when you record outside of your studio, you bring SM58s. Why don't you bring the SM7B?
Mainly because I'm lazy and don't want to disconnect all this stuff. And so it works out. It's also fairly expensive. I mean, this mic was $399 and it's like, I don't really want to have to bring it in a gig bag and bring it in, you know, maybe it's going to sit in my car for a few hours and I'm in Las Vegas and it's hot as hell out here. So, you know, I kind of don't want to leave that. But also, I mean, SM58s, they sound great. That's one thing, you know, for people just getting into it. It's like, you really don't need to jump right to the SM7B. Part of the reason I use this mic is it's less post-processing that I have to do once I get to my DAW. It just sounds great, you know, this thing going through that cloud lifter, and then it already sounds good. I do, of course, you know, usually add a little EQ and compression and stuff like that, but generally speaking, though, it sounds great. The SM58 sounds really good, too, especially if you do a little more post-processing after.
Do you do much in-person recording with guests?
I don't really get to record in person that much anymore. You know, hopefully one day that'll be the regular I'll be able to again. But most of my recordings are long distance, like we're doing now over Riverside, but, you know, sometimes over various other services.
I can imagine going from on-site recording with Shure SM58s to having conversations remotely where you can't control everything is quite a bit different. How do your guests normally sound on these interviews?
my guests, they might be just talking into their Apple headphones, you know? They might be talking into a Yeti mic. They might be talking into a webcam. You kind of can't control everything if you're going to be having guests on your podcast. You know, it's nice for me, for my voice, I always know that I've got this to talk into. And so that at least covers half of the show. But the other person talking, you know, people are used to it, that not every voice is going to be, you know, 100%.
Piecing it together has been around a while. How many episodes are you up to?
For our main numbered episodes, we hit 197 this coming week, but we also have special episodes. I have these side series that are the same thing, basically, but a little twist on the format. And so those don't get the exact same numbering, and it's a whole thing.
That really sounds like more than one show a week. How many shows do you do?
It's supposed to be a one-a-week show, but as it's a movie show, there's a lot of movies that come out. And even during the pandemic, there's still a lot of movies that come out. And if I want to cover it, I'm going to cover it. And then it ends up becoming a two-a-week show. It becomes a three-a-week show even sometimes. As much time as I want to throw at it, that's how many episodes I'm going to make. It's been a wild ride since 2018. It started because, like I said, on Bird Road, the other podcast I do, which was the first podcast I did, I was always trying to kind of steer the conversation into movies because that's my favorite thing to talk about. Eventually, I was like, I should just do my own show, and why not?
Okay, so there's a big difference between I want to talk about movies and the Piecing It Together podcast. How did you get to just the general idea of wanting to talk about movies to the format of Piecing It Together?
Yeah, I just started brainstorming what the concept would be because I knew I wanted to talk movies, but I didn't want it to just be a movie review show. There's plenty of those, and there's lots of great ones out there. There's plenty to listen to, and so I wanted to kind of do my own thing. And I do tend to like to talk about movies in terms of, oh, it's this meets this meets this. And so I kind of centered in on what films inspired other films. And so that way, me and a guest each episode will approach the film through the lens of what movies might have inspired it. And we're not doing it in so much of like a film school way where it's like, oh, these specifically did inspire the film. Like we have actual research into what the filmmaker has said and all that. And it's just more of a feeling of like, oh, this feels like this. This seems reminiscent of that. And so this way we can come up with a fun list of things we think might have been inspirations. And film fans that enjoyed that particular movie we're talking about, they end up with a big list of other movies to check out.
Well, I really like the concept. I guess the next question is it working? How many downloads does your show get?
My episodes tend to generally be in the 80 to 150 range after the first week. And let's say I'm only doing four episodes that month. In theory, at the high end there, you know, should be 600 downloads. But my average monthly downloads is closer to like 1,500 to 2,000 downloads, you know, most months.
Wait a minute. You're saying that your normal downloads for a month should be around 600 based on launch performance, but most months you're between 1,500 and 2,000. Why do you think that is?
That means people are going back and discovering old episodes. They're watching a movie, maybe searching, you know, a movie from, you know, a few years ago or something. Let's say Parasite, the Oscar winner from a couple years ago. They finally caught up with Parasite, and then they go back and listen to our episode on Parasite. And so the fact that these shows, they continue to live and continue to get more and more downloads. And there are some months where I will like just randomly check back to some older episodes and I'm like, that's getting numbers like as if it was just posted. It must have just hit Netflix or something like that. More people are seeing it, more people are discovering that episode, and then in turn listening to more episodes. And so definitely paints a bigger picture, I think, than just specific first week downloads.
I think it's important to take a minute and reflect exactly on what David is saying here. If you're a podcaster, you always hear that consistency and time are two things that are important when podcasting. David's show is a perfect example of how the back catalog gets more downloads than his new releases. That concept is called evergreen content. Now, if you're podcasting about the news, you may not get access to this evergreen style of content, and you really need to pay attention to your immediate near-term downloads. But for most podcasters listening to this, I would absolutely say you want to build up your evergreen content, and as people search for different things, your shows will come up. People will listen to it, and you'll get listener after listener after listener the slow way. which is a really great way to build an audience over the long term. David, we appreciate you so much going into the numbers of your podcast. I know for a lot of creators, it can be uncomfortable to talk about downloads and podcast performance. I would absolutely consider your podcast very successful, and it sounds like you're doing everything right in order to continue to grow it. But maybe we can rewind the film back to the very beginning. When you decided to start piecing it together, did you have a launch plan?
I mean, first things first was definitely the plan. And I don't know so much that I planned out like a long term or anything like that. It was more so about figuring out what the show was going to be. So that way, once I started actually putting episodes together, I knew that I kind of had something in place for what they would be like. I created a rough outline of what I expected each show to be like, even though I wasn't quite sure. You know, so that way, when I recorded that first episode, it was already pretty formed. I mean, the show hasn't changed that much in these 4 years. It added a few little things here and there. It refined how I plan each episode and certainly expanded as far as my guests. I mean, at first, it was mostly friends. I still have those friends on for occasional episodes, but now I'm film critics from all over the world and filmmakers and stuff like that. So, you know, it's certainly expanded, but it's still the basic same premise that I had come up with of record an intro. I then introduce my guest. If it's their first time on the show, let them introduce themselves, plug themselves, all that kind of stuff. And then we just go back and forth with our what we call puzzle pieces, which are the movies we think inspired this movie that is the main one we're featuring. And talking about those pieces, each one, we kind of just go back and forth, any thoughts we have on it. And then I, as the host, will try to naturally move it on to the next one and the next one and the next one until we're done, get to some closing thoughts and wrap it up. And then I have an outro that I record separately. It's a outline that I feel like it works, and it makes it so that I always know what I'm kind of getting myself into. You can't always 100% know what the guest is going to be like if they're going to fully get the formula 100%. But as the host, it's my job to, you know, kind of lead them through it and hope that it works out that way. And so far, it's worked out great all the time. I've been really lucky with some really amazing guests over these years. But yeah, as far as like first starting off, that main thing is just knowing what I wanted the show to be. I can't imagine if I had just went in and said, all right, movie show, let's go, let's record an episode. I can't imagine it would have like been formed in any kind of real way where I would have been able to maneuver, you know, all of the what's going to happen in the moments of actually recording a podcast episode.
Yeah, I agree. I think you have to kind of nail that concept up front just so that you can get on the mic with some sort of clarity. Now, did you have any sort of marketing plan at launch, or did you just leverage Bird Road in order to get your initial set of listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. It was started off as spreading out from Bird Road. Also, just social media, the usual that I still do to this day. Social media is always like the number one way of getting the word out. And, you know, of course, sharing the episode and, you know, doing the whole back and forth thing, getting in touch with other people that are in the same niche and, you know, hoping that they will be interested. And of course, in the process of finding guests, hopefully they check out the show and end up liking it and they listen to it. And then that's the whole back and forth game of being part of the podcast community.
If you get on Facebook or Reddit or in any of the groups, there's always podcasters that are on like episode 3 or 4 or 5, and you can tell they're feeling discouraged with their download numbers. Can you remember how you felt in the very beginning about your podcast's performance?
Yeah, I was actually kind of encouraged, even though at the time I was like probably maxing out at like 20 downloads in the first month of any episode. I knew it had to be, you know, random people on the internet who thought, oh, this sounds like an interesting show and are listening to it, because I knew for a fact my friends weren't the ones listening. And, you know, some of them were sharing, which is great, and probably how we got those initial listeners. The fact that anybody was listening is great because, you know, you want to know that people are out there listening. It kind of drives you to keep doing it. And coming from my music background, when I put my albums, I mean, granted, my albums, you know, it's not a rock band. It's, you know, it's dark, instrumental, electronica, new age, ambient, alternative type music. It's like, it's not exactly the most popular kind of genre, but getting people to listen to that is like pulling teeth, you know? It's like kind of difficult to get any kind of interaction with an audience with kind of a niche music genre like that. So I'm used to, you know, putting stuff out there on social media and not getting the biggest reaction in the world. The fact that anybody was listening is definitely an encouraging sign. But again, it starts off with small numbers and just slowly grows.
That's really great perspective. I think everyone can learn from that example. Now that you've been doing Piecing It Together for a while, what do you think the weakest part of the show is, or a part of the show that you feel like could be improved?
That's kind of a complicated one because it really changes from episode to episode, depending on, I would say, my personal knowledge of the films that I, you know, maybe I know, oh, this is inspired by Bond movies in general, but maybe I haven't seen any of those Bond movies in 20 years. And so I can't really dig deep enough into that history of Bond films to be able to speak on that. And maybe if I'm lucky, my guest picks up the slack and, you know, and they're like, oh yeah, totally, Dave. That reminds me of this, and this from these specific Bond examples. And I'm like, phew, you know, that worked out well for me, you know. But I would say that and time management, which kind of leads into that same exact thing, to want to be able to research and watch as many things as I can so I have that vast pool to dig into for my puzzle pieces. I'd say that's like the number one difficulty is time management, especially when, you know, someone like me that has like a lot of different projects you're juggling.
I think this is an important topic because you always hear the advice, you have to niche. You want to be the smallest niche possible so that you can provide the most value to those specific people as you possibly can. Do you think that you'd be able to provide greater value if you niched down to a specific genre of movies or set of movies that you knew a lot about? Because currently on Piecing It Together, you talk about all sorts of movies, from dramas to comedies and everything in between.
Well, I think, yes, there's a very wide range of movies, but I think the show itself still is a very specific niche. Like if you were to, like, say, go to Apple Podcasts and go to the film and TV category, you then have the separate sections. You've got after shows, you have film reviews, you've got film history. I feel like the show itself is a specific niche, which is, I would call, a deep dive, something that you listen to because you just watched a movie, it's kind of buzzing in your head and you're like thinking about all the ins and outs of it, and you want something that's going to inspire more thought into the background of that movie, to the history of that movie and movies like it, and where a movie like this comes from. So I feel like that in itself is its own niche. And so I don't feel like niching down on the specific kind of movies that we talk about would really change things much, because it is kind of its own show to begin with.
I know for me, listening to podcasts about my hobbies is great, but I really love talking about my hobbies with other people. Is there a place where you interact with your listeners, where you cultivate a community around your show?
So social media has been pretty good. As far as that's concerned, Twitter is probably my most active, but also we have a Facebook group that is tied in with the show. It's called Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, and I wanted to brand it separately from the show so it doesn't feel so salesy, you know, the Piecing It Together, you know, Facebook group or something like that. And so, yeah, I came up with Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, and I keep the group closed, where it's invite only, where people can request to join and they have a questionnaire they have to do. And that way people kind of feel like safe and comfortable to be themselves and talk about movies where, you know, again, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining about friends or anything like that, but you know, everybody's got that friend who's going, oh, that movie's stupid, what are you talking about? You know? And so like, I just didn't want it to turn into one of those kind of groups where your friends see everything. I want it to be a community of people who want to talk about movies. And it's really worked out quite well. The group grows very slowly because of the way that I have, you know, positioned it, but the people who are in there are active and they talk about movies and they're respectful. And yeah, there's jokes back and forth and inside jokes, but I think it's turned into a really great little community. And that has been a great place to create some of that back and forth with listeners, because a lot of the listeners join that group and talk on the posts about the movies we're talking about on the show.
Podcast listening is a very passive activity. Is there anything you're doing or plan to do in the future to get people to interact with you or in your Facebook group?
Yeah, I want to do more contests on the show and stuff like that. But yeah, listener interaction is definitely, it's one of the hardest parts, because like you said, it's a very passive thing. It's very possible that everyone listening is driving their car and they want to enter your contest, but they forget about it by the time they get parked. You know, it's like you just never know where people are going to be at any given time. So having different avenues of back and forth with them definitely like maximizes the possibility of people connecting in that way.
Yeah, I agree. You have to have a presence everywhere, because you just never know where your listener is going to want to interact with you. Now, maybe we can switch gears from your podcast to more the production of podcasts. Are you looking to take on additional clients, either for production or for scores or anything?
I would like to take on another client at some point, maybe another two. I also would like to eventually do a narrative podcast myself. I have a few ideas for that, especially with my music composing background. You know, that's something where if I had the right story and the right collaborators, and then I could score the whole story. And that's something that I would like to do in the future.
So if there's a creator listening to this out there that has the next great audio drama idea, are you interested in scoring it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I just finished work on a feature film a couple of weeks ago. I'm working on a short film right now. And I've done little bits of pieces of music for audio dramas, but I haven't done a full one yet. And I'm certainly looking forward to it.
That's awesome. And I really hope there's someone out there listening that can connect with you and really make something beautiful. Now, maybe we can move on and get some free consulting. Do you have some production advice for podcast creators?
I mean, I guess the two things that I would say, and they're kind of both related. One is constantly trying to reinvent the wheel every time and not having a set way of doing things. I mean, you should find what works and stick to it. Occasionally, you can update that and make it better, but it feels like some people are starting from scratch every time, not quite knowing how to get their setup set up, or you know, just leave it set up. You know, if you can help to do that, leave it set up, know where your knobs go, know where your buttons go, know which software you're using, and keep doing that, because that way you can, you know, it's almost like, you know, practice or exercise or whatever. You can just get in and do the thing, which is podcasting, which is having the conversation and putting it out there for the world. The other thing, and like I said, it's kind of related to that. If you're going to do your editing and post-production and all that in a DAW, I use Studio One. People use Audacity or Audition or, you know, whatever. Put together a template. Doesn't take that long to do. Learn how to do it. I'm sure whichever DAW you're using, there's got to be like a good YouTube tutorial on how to put it together. But have some of that stuff already set up. I have a template, few templates. But for example, for a regular Piecing It Together episode, which is me and one guest usually, I have a template where the intro theme is already on a track called Songs and Themes. It's already on there. It's already mixed well. And then I have two interstitial pieces that I can move around on that track for however long they need to be. And then I have the outro already on the track. Then I have two tracks, one for myself, and it already has EQ and compression and a limiter on it, just for it to already sound exactly how I want me to sound. The guest one, I obviously have to, you know, adjust a little bit depending on how they sound based on their particular microphone, but I at least have a starting point. You know, and then I have something on the master channel, so that way I know nothing's ever going to clip because I get that set up. And it takes so much of the time out of it. You know, I don't have to be fiddling with this, setting up my tracks and all that kind of stuff. It's already there to go. Instead of hitting file, new project, I hit file, new project based on, you know, template, and boom, I've got all those tracks already set up, whole bunch of the audio already set up in it, and ready to go and have the conversation, which is the fun part.
I just want to take a minute and pause on that piece of advice. After I recorded this interview with David, I realized I actually didn't create templates or have anything set up in my DAW, which is Adobe Audition. I went back and created templates for all of indie drop-in shows, and it really sped things up at least 15 minutes per episode, which is pretty good, I think. David, thank you so much for the great advice and spending so much of your time today helping podcast creators. We really appreciate it. Now, please tell everybody where they can find you.
Sure, absolutely. Well, my main website is bydavidrosen.com. That's where you can find my music, also mentions of all the podcasts I work on. So you can check that out. Also, piecingpod.com is the website for piecing it together. And that's where I'm mostly active on Twitter, is at piecingpod. So if you want to connect with me there. And otherwise, yeah, I'd love to hear from you if you ever need, you know, music for your projects or any producing work for podcasts, any of that kind of stuff. I'm always open to.
Thank you so much to David Rosen, host of Piecing It Together, for coming on the show. I learned so much, and I hope you did as well. If you're looking for original music to be created for your movie or podcast, I would definitely reach out to David. If you have an audio drama or other type of podcast and you want it produced or scored or anything else, he can totally help you with that. I'll put links to David's stuff and everything we talked about on today's show down in the show notes so you can check it out. If you're an indie podcaster and you'd like to grow your show, you should check out indiedropin.com/creators. For a chance to be featured on one of Indie Drop-In shows. If you've made it this far, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. And if you know of another podcaster who might find this information useful, please forward it along. I'm sure they would appreciate it, and so would I. Thanks again for listening. Bye-bye.